Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Today's episode is brought to you by Select Italy. Select Italy designs custom itineraries and books a whole range of products and services, including fascinating tours, romantic weddings, or honeymoon trips, along with ticketing services for museums and musical events in Italy. Visit selectitaly.com to learn more. Amateur Traveler, episode 504. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about volcanoes and cathedrals, castles and cheese, as we go to the Auvergne region of France. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We'll hear more from our sponsor a little later, but first, let's talk about Auvergne, France. I'd like to welcome back to the show Allison and Andrew Cornford Matheson from cheeseweb.eu. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for having us.
And we're talking France today. Last time you were on the show, we were talking a region of Italy, the Tyrol region of Italy. But we are talking France and we are talking cheese, which is good because last time we had people on from cheeseweb.eu and we did not talk cheese. Where are we talking about today?
We are talking about the region of Auvergne, which is pretty much smack dab in the middle of France.
And I swear that region had never been there before. When I looked on the map and saw what we were talking about, I didn't understand why I had never heard of it. Although you did say, for history buffs like me, it is the region where Vichy is.
Correct.
And I certainly knew about Vichy, France. But we're talking really just the middle of the country.
It really is, and it's really unpopulated and unknown even to a lot of French people. And those who do know about it think it's pretty much just populated with cows and not much else.
Right. So for France, it would be the flyover state, essentially, in a miniature sense. But it is. It's the drive-through. People are from Germany heading towards Spain, or people from the west coast of France heading towards Italy. You know, they just kind of drive through there and don't really stop.
And then you were telling me before we started recording that there's a little confusion here because this used to be a separate province and now has just merged recently, last year?
Right. So actually, just last month, the beginning of January this year, France merged a bunch of regions together. So they're kind of using working names right now, which are really just a combination of the two names before. So Auvergne has joined with Rhône-Alpes.
Yeah.
And right now, the region is just called Auvergne-Rhône-Alpes.
Okay. Rhône-Alpes is where we would find the city of Lyon,
right,
which begs the question of how do we get to this center of France? What's the best way to get here?
If you're coming in from the States, then you're probably best to fly via Paris. And you could either fly from Paris on a local flight to
Clermont-Ferrand,
which is the capital, or possibly Lyon as well, is not that far away. Or you could take the train from Paris, also would be a nice trip.
One more time with the name of the capital, because unfortunately we don't pronounce it. So it's Clermont-Ferrand?
Exactly.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Or if we're spelling it in English, Clermont-Ferrand.
Yep.
You got it.
Okay. Here we go. All right. Excellent. Why should someone go to Auvergne?
I think the people that are really going to love Auvergne are people who like to get out into nature. At least that was really the theme of our trip. There are large cities like Clermont-Ferrand and Vichy, but we pretty much avoided those in favor of the smaller villages and the nature.
Yeah, there's a real sense of eco-sustainable tourism in the area. It's very green. And it really encourages people to get outside and explore, hiking, doing a little bit of boating, etc.
Yeah, if you're a walker, this is heaven for you. There's loads and loads of excellent walking trails. So yeah, really nature and great food.
Cheese.
Lots of cheese. we'll get to the cheese, but cheese is definitely a highlight.
I don't know why we're not talking about the cheese.
Excellent. What kind of itinerary would you recommend? What itinerary did you do?
Well, we drove through the area and, like I said, really hitting kind of the little villages and the nature.
Starting where?
We began just outside of Vichy, but if you're coming from Clermont-Ferrand, it would be really easy to do pretty much the same itinerary that we did. But one of the things that we were focusing on, Auvergne has some really unique places to stay. And the tourist office has actually created this designation called Natitude, which is attitude with an N, and the N is for nature. But basically, they've kind of handpicked these different types of places to stay. So we're talking hotels, eco lodges, bed and breakfasts, even campgrounds, but they're all unique. There's something a little quirky and offbeat about all of them. They use local products, local ingredients, local building materials, and they are eco-sustainable. And so they sit really well within the nature of Auvergne. And so we stayed at a variety of these different places as we were traveling through. And honestly, any one of the places that we stayed, I would easily stay for a week. I mean, they were really interesting.
And I think from an itinerary perspective, again, if you're coming into Vichy or coming to Clermont-Ferrand, kind of doing that, you know, starting at the north and heading south and then looping back up would make a good itinerary for anyone coming through. As Allison said, we did it by vehicle, so we were in our motorhome.
Well, then it looks like we're in a rural area where a vehicle is probably a pretty good choice.
It's either that or hiking. I mean, that's the other option. Is if you're really into hiking, then you've got lots of hiking routes through there. The French are renowned for having well signposted hiking routes, and even the Compostela route comes through that area in Puy-en-Velay, which is another town to the south of the region.
Okay.
So cycling, motorcycling, they also have a number of routes that are not only for motorcycling, but kind of specially marked out for them as kind of highlight trips. So, but definitely you want to get off the highways onto the smaller roads.
And, for sure.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that as well.
Okay. So you started in Vichy, and where was your first stop?
So our first stop was at a really adorable, what they call in France, chambre d'hôte. So host chambers, but it's essentially what we would consider a bed and breakfast.
Right.
And this was a French and South African couple who had restored this old farmhouse and made really quirky but gorgeous accommodations. Mm. And so that was our first night and our first introduction. And the nice thing about chambre d'hôte is they often have table d'hôte, so the host table. And the hostess, she prepared this amazing meal of all locally sourced ingredients, and you eat with all of the other guests who were staying at the chambre d'hôte. So you get to meet this whole variety of different people coming from different places. So there were another French couple there. There were some Germans who were there for hiking, and people actually just from Vichy, which is about 20 minutes drive away. So it was really interesting to get their perspective on where we should go and what we should see when we were there.
So that's the best way to really meet the local population and get a real local experience, is to do these bed and breakfasts and do these table d'hôtes with the guests.
So you are not in a little village, but you're actually out in the country, 20 minutes from Vichy?
Well, this place, the Jardin de Tavernet, it was in the middle of pretty much nowhere. I mean,
yeah.
It was down in a small valley. She had beautiful, huge rose bushes, but, you know, there weren't really neighbors, if you would say. But yeah, it was about 20 minutes outside of Vichy, and there's lots of other small towns nearby, but it was...
Sorry to cut you off there, but the next morning, actually, our hostess had recommended we visit the village of Charroux, which is Charroux.
And we're going to put all these in the show notes because there's no way you can hear the pronunciation and automatically assume the French spelling.
Well, especially when you throw in X's and G's.
Yeah,
you
know.
Exactly right.
And Auvergne has its own kind of dialect too, which is a little special. But Charroux is one of the plus beau villages en France, which I don't know if you're familiar with that designation.
I'm not, no.
It basically translates to the prettiest villages in France. And this is basically designated by an overseeing body. And you can apply to have your town be considered for this. And there's mm-hmm. a bunch of different criteria that the town has to meet. We visited a number of them in Auvergne, and they definitely are pretty. If nothing else, they're very, very pretty.
Charroux is a medieval village which is known for various things, one being saffron. There was candle maker.
There was a mustard factory, an artisanal mustard factory. There was a soap making mm-hmm. yeah. workshop, but all like very local sort of one and two person businesses.
And it's ridiculously cute village.
I mean, yeah, like disgustingly cute.
I mean, you look at some of these villages, Chris, and you think, France, you're just not trying. I mean, come on. You could be prettier than this.
I sense just a little bit of sarcasm in your voice there. Just
a tiny bit yeah. of sarcasm, yeah. yeah. But yeah, so a really gorgeous little introduction to the area for sure.
Let's take a break here and hear from our sponsor, who is Select Italy. Select Italy is the ultimate source for travel to Italy and offers a wide array of superior Italian travel products and services, including customized itineraries, fascinating tours, romantic wedding or honeymoon trips, unique and fun culinary classes, yacht charters, transportation, hotel reservations, villa bookings, tickets for museums and musical events, and more. Anything and everything you need for optimum travel to Italy is possible with Select Italy. Their helpful travel planners in Chicago, New York, and Shanghai are always ready to give the best advice on when and where to visit, while the Florence support staff is there to help should you need anything while you are in Italy. Always eager to introduce their clients to great new destinations, the company has expanded its offerings and travel services to the Balkans with the launch of Select Croatia. Visit selectitaly.com and selectcroatia.com. And thanks to Select Italy for sponsoring Amateur Traveler.
So from Charroux, we headed towards Manzat. And this is in another department. So France, to be extra complicated, they have regions, and then within regions, they have departments. Mm-hmm. And so the highlight of this department is Puy de Dôme. And I think I'll let Andrew talk about that since he loves driving and climbing up things.
So the context is P-U-Y, mm-hmm. To sort of understand that. Puy means, essentially, it's an old term for a mountain, or almost like a spout, if you will. You know, basically, the top of a mountain that looks like it is a spout. And that comes from the fact that in this region, it's an old volcanic mm-hmm. area. So there's a whole chain of extinct volcanoes through this part of France called
Chaîne de Puy.
Yeah, the chain of Puys, the chain of volcanic mountains. And it's really interesting because all of those mountains really do look like volcanic cones. I mean, it looks like they were dropped there and they were funnel cones created. And one of the tallest there is called Puy de Dôme, which is one of the largest ones that's there.
It is the biggest one, I
think. And at the top of it, they have built a panoramic. And it used to be that you could drive to the top of this Puy, and it was causing so many congestion problems with cyclists going up, buses going up and coming down, and cars going up and coming down. They were getting 50,000 vehicles up there a year. They finally shut that down and put up a train so you could take a train to the top of this mountain. And from the top of this mountain, you have a beautiful panoramic view over the valleys and all this chain of volcanoes that are out on plain around you.
So you see this flat, very agricultural countryside mm-hmm. with all of these bumps Cones. From the volcanoes. It's really amazing.
Yeah, when I looked at the region, it looked like on Google, I think every third or fourth picture was a picture of an ancient volcano or cinder cone.
Yeah.
Some of them were the same one over and over again, but it was definitely one of the things they wanted you to note about the region.
For sure.
And it's so surprising because you don't think of...
No, I don't think of France and volcanic. No.
France is a deep volcano.
Exactly. Right?
It doesn't come together. But one of the, again, you know, to our point about hiking, you know, if you go at the top of this mountain, you can look down at all these hiking trails that go between all the different summits, and you can just hike from one to the other. I mean, we did the train ride up to the top of this mountain, but you can actually walk to the top. It's about I think they say it's an hour and a half walk to the top and then a 45-minute walk down, depending on what shape you're in. I kind of figure for me it's about a 2.5-hour
yeah.
walk up. But yeah, it's a beautiful area. It's a wonderful experience too. And then when we were there, there were plenty of paragliders who were jumping off the summit and then paragliding down to the train station and just jumping, gliding down, getting on the train and coming back up. And they built the train system to do that entirely.
And the nice thing about going there near the beginning of a trip too is that it's not just the mountain mm-hmm. and the train. They have a big interpretation center. And so there's films about the volcanic activity and how the area was created. And the train itself is actually designed in kind of an eco-sustainable way, just sort of fitting with the whole theme of sustainability in the area.
If you're a train geek, the train regenerates, I think it's 30% of its power. It's an electric train. So it regenerates a 30% of its power coming down the mountain.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. And you went basically, by the time we're in Puy de Dôme, you're now in the middle of the region, just to the west of Clermont-Ferrand.
Right.
Yes. Actually, again, coming from the north, coming down from Vichy area.
So this whole region is not all that large that it took you that long to drive from one to the other?
No, everything is relatively close. If you had time constraints and you needed to get from point A to point B quickly, you can. But for us, the whole point of being there was to slow down and really enjoy the little towns and these beautiful drives, scenic drives kind of from point A to point B. So, for example, after we left Puy de Dôme, we did one of the prettiest drives, I think, of our stay there. It's hard to pick a prettiest, but that was definitely in the top. And it was through an area called Les Gorges de la Sioule.
Even we can't figure out.
Yeah. So, basically through a beautiful river gorge.
Okay.
Lots of winding roads, and not just do you see the, you know, the beautiful gorge spreading out below you, but you also have all these castles along the way that are kind of sitting up atop of these cliffs and looking down over the gorge. So that's a beautiful drive. And again, to Elsa's point about motorcyclists, this is one of those routes that is really popular for motorcycles.
And I am going to make you try that again because you talked over each other. So the name of the gorge again is?
Gorge de la Sioule, S-I-O-U-L-E.
Okay.
So we kind of spent some time winding our way through there and just admiring the scenery. And basically, we were heading towards a town called Manzat. And the point of going there was for another of these really interesting natitude accommodations. And I'm not even really sure what we would call this one. I guess kind of a eco cabin in the woods.
Eco-minimalist cabin in the woods. It was fascinating, but it was perfect.
So the place is called Le Bois Basalt, which translates to wood and basalt. And this is basically the two elements that are famous in this region of Manzat, because there was an old basalt quarry there at one point. And four young architects who are from the region got together and wanted to do a sustainable tourism project and came up with this idea for Bois Basalt. And it's a series of ecologically sustainable cabins. There's a number of cabins. I think there's four that take two people and three that take four people and one for eight people.
And you say cabins. I've been looking at a few pictures here, and it looks to me like we're talking really more the tiny house movement.
Definitely. We stayed in one of the ones for two people, and it really got us thinking about the tiny house movement and small spaces. And we actually had very long conversations the evening that we were there about living in a tiny space.
I mean, we already were living in a tiny space.
We were living in a motorhome. So, I mean, this was just kind of the next step. Yeah,
which, you know, for the North American audience, the motorhome, what we're talking about is half the size of an average North American motorhome. And, you know, so we're already living in a fairly small box. And then we're staying overnight in another box that really had us thinking about how we could turn even that into something even more efficient.
And again, everything is sustainable. So in our little cabin, we had a composting toilet and we had a cold water sink. But before I completely terrify people into thinking, I'm never going there because I need my hot shower in the morning. And so what they did to cut down on waste and cut down on power and water consumption is they built one large shower room unit, and the beautiful, beautiful showers, big rain showers. But each shower unit goes with each of the cabins. So while you are staying in one cabin, you have your own shower unit, which is just a few steps away.
Yeah, okay. So no communal showers. You have your own. You can put you lock your stuff in there, and it's all yours for the duration of your stay.
So they're all together, but they're not shared.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're very high end. You've got beautiful bathing facilities. You've got this minimalist cabin, eco, small space, tiny house, and a fabulous view.
Yeah, the highlight is just this spectacular view of the Puy Mountains in the distance. And really, I think one of the highlights of the trip for me was sitting on the little porch of this cabin, watching the sunset over the Puys. It was just unforgettable.
Yeah.
Excellent. Where to next?
So next up, I think we need to start getting into the cheese.
I don't know. It might be too early for cheese.
the only thing that we knew about Auvergne and the only reason we had heard the name Auvergne was from a particular type of cheese. And it's a blue cheese called Bleu d'Auvergne, blue from Auvergne. Mm-hmm. And a French chef friend of ours had introduced us to this blue cheese years and years ago. And it was, we call it our gateway blue cheese because like a lot of people we were okay, a little right. iffy about eating moldy cheese. And he really encouraged us to try this cheese. And we both completely fell in love with it. So when I learned about this cheese, that was my association with Auvergne. And so when we planned this trip to Auvergne, I said, okay, while we're there, we have to get blue cheese. But what I learned while we were there is there's actually 5 different cheeses from the region that have the AOP designation. Uh-huh. And so this is an international now designation for protected cultural cheeses.
So these are, I want to say artisanal. I don't know if that's, if there's a better term for it than that.
Yeah.
Done in a traditional fashion.
They have to be made from specific ingredients in the traditional way. And it's very controlled where and how they're produced.
And it sort of forms a trademark as well, because it's
right.
AOP stands for Appellation d'Origine Protégée. So it's okay. The name is protected from based on its origin. So
right, right.
It's their traditional method combined with it being in a particular area.
Right.
Right. In the same way in France that Champagne is both a method Champenoise as well as done from the region Champagne.
Exactly. So if you make Champagne in a different region, then you have to call it sparkling wine. It's the same with these cheeses.
You'd still say it done in the method of Champagne, but you can't say it's Champagne. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Now, a little challenge for our listeners, because I'd like the listeners to think about how many different French cheeses they can name and, you know, write that pause here, write that list down. And then I think there are at least one cheese in France per day of the week. Isn't it something
easily,
like that? I think there's something like 360 plus different types of cheeses. So it's not surprising when you say that there are 5 different ones there, you know, because I think every region has, you know, we're not just talking about one cheese per region by any means.
No, definitely. And I mean, these are only the AOP cheeses. I mean, there's probably hundreds of cheeses just in Auvergne, but these are their very special traditional cheeses. So what is really great in Auvergne is they've created a route of cheeses of Auvergne. And so it's signposted. Route de fromage, yes, very good. So it's signposted. You'll see these brown signs with a little symbol of cheese all over the place. And there's, I think, over 40 stops on the route. So there's different farms that you can stop at to try cheese. There's cheese, like artisanal cheese makers. There's dairies. Some of the farms even offer you to stay overnight as sort of another bed and breakfast type idea.
Right.
And I had to pull Allison away from staying overnight at the farm. I couldn't deal with that much cheese, really.
You get to snuggle baby cows.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. So there's a website dedicated to this, of course, and you can pick up a map at any of the tourist offices and kind of eat your way through the different cheeses.
I could sell my wife on that. That's something that would work. Bread and cheese, we really don't need anything else.
Well, one of the great things about Auvergne as well is it's a good budget spot. I mean, we love to eat and we love to eat in restaurants, but we actually didn't eat in a lot of restaurants in Auvergne because the picnic opportunities are just too good. And you can walk into pretty much any supermarket and still find very local, very regional, artisanal products. The grocery stores there, even the big chain grocery stores, really blew us away with the selection they had at their cheese counters, their meat counters, and everything was marked that was from Auvergne. And they're very passionate about their local products and protecting those.
Which contrasts to some of the other parts of France where, you know, food is still very important. What Allison's saying is that this was even more pronounced, that, you know, they had a local meat counter that served just local meats. I mean, it wasn't just they had a small section that said this was a local product. The locals there demanded, I want my local cheeses. I want my local meats. I don't want you to bring stuff in from away. They were phenomenal access to local products there.
And it's very affordable. So you can easily walk into a grocery store if you're doing this kind of as a road trip as we did, and pick up your picnic lunch for the day. And then there's just so many amazing pull-off spot that you can just pull to the side of the road and have your picnic. And it's a nice, affordable way to eat your way around the region.
And looking at the map of the region, I would guess that 1/4 to 1/5 of the region is national parks. I mean, there's a lot of places where you could picnic here.
Absolutely. We did stop at a number of cheese farms along the cheese route, but favorite by far was, and here's another good French one for you, La Grange de la Haute Vallée. The farm of the High Valley.
Mm-hmm.
They produce 4 of the 5 AOP cheeses from the region. And they had the most amazing Le d'Auvergne cheese I think we've ever had. I'm still dreaming about this cheese.
Now, not all of the 5 cheeses were a blue cheese?
No.
They're of a different variety, or are they all?
2 of them are blue.
Okay.
One of them, which is quite well known, at least in Europe, is called Cantal, and it's a harder cheese.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
There's another one called Saler, S-A-L-E-R-S. So Sellers, I guess, if you pronounced it English-wise. Mm-hmm. And that actually comes from a particular breed of cow that grazes in the mountains. They're red and very cute. And then the other one that they didn't have at that farm is Saint Nectaire, yes. And that's kind of a creamier, almost more towards a brie or a camembert-style cheese.
Got it. Okay. Did you say the name of the farm?
La Grange de la Haute Vallée.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Yes, you did. Okay.
And it's just outside of the village of Murat. Again, Murat, it's a nice stopping point. I think you could easily spend a morning there just wandering around. It's another very pretty village with nice little shops and
great views of the valley and it and surrounding mountains.
Okay. And now we're in the southern part of the region.
So we're heading south. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, from the cheese route, we got into heading a little bit more. Well, if you can get more remote in Auvergne, which I think has a population density of like 9 people per square kilometer or less than that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was something crazy. We looked up in sort of the Paris area, it's almost 1,000 people per square kilometer. And in Auvergne, it's like 5 or something. Yeah.
Anyway, we ended up heading to this eco lodge that was really off the beaten path. I mean, we were looking at it, following these roads to try and get to it and wondering, you know, had we missed it because we kept driving and driving and driving and we were never getting there. But finally, we did manage to get there. And it's a beautiful lodge called the Instant d'Absolu. So absolute instance, I guess you could
say. Kind of incredible moments, I think, if we translated it a little more.
And it's perched on the edge of this lake that, when we were talking to the owners of the Eco Lodge, basically the lake had been drying up for years. And when they came in and invested in creating this Eco Lodge, they partnered with the local council to revitalize the lake and revitalize the nature around the lake. And it was just a really interesting partnership between private and public interests. So this Eco Lodge is focused on relaxation, getting away from all the busyness of life in cities, etc. Got a small spa, lots of hiking around there. We did a nice hike the following morning.
Yeah, beautiful walk.
And they've got a wonderful restaurant on site, so you don't really have to go very far to get good food there. And again, local, hyper-local, they try and get everything within 20 kilometers of the lodge itself. And so just a beautiful low stone building, too. It's kind of blends right into the landscape.
Yeah, and you're right on the edge of the lake. So when you're in their little spa, sitting in the hot tub, all you see is this lake and kind of the mountains in the background and the sky.
There was a thunder and lightning storm rolling over our head. So we were actually sitting in the spa and watching the thunderhead rolling over top. So it was kind of neat.
I'm not sure they recommend that, actually.
And again, there, if you want to get in touch with kind of their nature and understand more about the area, just a few minutes away from the Eco Lodge is a little museum called La Maison de la Pintadelle. And Pintadelle is just the really hyper-local region. It's just a little center that talks about the nature and the landscapes and the environment in this little section of Auvergne.
Excellent. Any other non-hiking, non-cheese or food-related activities you took part in, just that I want to make sure that we cover?
Would definitely recommend a visit to Puy-en-Velay. This is a bigger city, but it's a really, really unique city. And if you're into culture and museums and UNESCO sites, then this is the place for you.
As it happens, I am into all of those things.
We know that. We saved this one for you.
Good, thank you.
As I mentioned earlier, this is where the Compostela route passes through. So there's a large cathedral here that welcomes the people on. I'm sorry, I'm talking about hiking again. Anyway, no, it's
That's okay.
welcomes we'll... pilgrims as part of the start of their. This is one of the cities where you can start from on the Compostela mm-hmm. route. So the cathedral there welcomes pilgrims who are starting out on that route. Plus, it's got, you know, these ridiculous statues on top of these spires of rocks that are in the middle of the city. And there's one that's actually got a chapel on the top. And it's 268 stairs to get to the top. So it's not for the faint of heart. But, you know, fabulous view from the top there. But also just being in this chapel at the top of this pillar of stone, it's just really a very homey feeling being inside there because it is so tight. And they had to build the chapel in such a weird way to make it fit on top of this spire.
It feels like it's carved right out of the mountain. And then you step outside and you just have this sweeping view of Puy-en-Velay, and you can see the UNESCO Cathedral. You can see all of these other spires jutting up out of the city. It's really...
And on another food-related note...
that's okay. I didn't think I would keep you off food for very long.
We just can't get away from it.
It's not a problem.
What I realized when we visit there, and this was a total realization for me that I've never thought of, but apparently Puy-en-Velay is where Puy lentils come from. So if you've ever had those little green lentils that they call Puy lentils, then they come from Puy-en-Velay.
I am not familiar with these. Okay.
And so when we get there and I've started seeing all these fields of lentils, it's when one and one added up to two and my brain's like, oh, this is where Puy lentils come from. So if you like lentils, then this is also an interesting place to visit.
And just outside of Puy-en-Velay is another fortress. And Andrew is very big into crumbly castles and fortresses.
Yeah, they've got the fortress of Polignac, which at this point is, there's not a whole lot left to it, but you can still get to the top of it and the battlements are still there. Parts of it are needing a lot of work to restore it, but it's another one of those where it's sitting on this pillar of rock or this plateau of rock, really, up above a small town, the town of Polignac. But it was built there just to keep an eye on this valley that was going through that went past Puy-en-Velay. And it's tied up to the Knights Templar and into the stories of the French kings, etc. It's a really fascinating spot to go and visit.
And one other kind of odd thing that we discovered, or odd for us, is that we had spent some time earlier in the summer up in the Loire Valley area in northern France. And it never really occurred to us that the Loire is actually a huge river, and it does dip all the way down into Auvergne. And actually, another one of the very beautiful drives in the region is along the Loire River Valley in Auvergne. The last of the kind of super unique places we stayed at was perched right on the Loire River. And this was a camping resort called Cozy Camp, but not in the way that we North Americans think of camping resorts. This was really glamping, I would say. And
very much
they had all different kinds okay. of eco tents, and they had a gypsy caravan that you could rent and camp in. And they had kind of treehouse tents for four people. And really, it would be a great place to stay, I think, with a family or with a group.
Yep.
And I don't want to assume that everybody knows the term glamping, but it's basically glamour and camping combined together, which gives you a picture there. So camping with your Chardonnay glass in
absolutely.
Hand.
Absolutely. There was absolutely no roughing it whatsoever in this place.
It's a tent in name only, really.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
And more like one of the ones we looked at, it was more like a treehouse.
Yeah.
It was fabulous. It was about 10 meters off the ground, and it was a fabulous spot for a family to stay.
Yeah, and again, everything is eco-sustainable, and they have a little restaurant there and sources all local products. So again, part of this Natitude program that just really kind of sums up everything that we like about travel.
Yeah.
Excellent. What surprised you about the region, about Auvergne?
Other than the fact that it was there at all.
Yeah, I swear it wasn't there before. Right?
No, I don't think it was. I guess just how wild and unspoiled it was. Because when we think of France and other places we've traveled through in France, it's very hard to get away from people. And even when you're in places where there's small villages, you just don't get that sense of kind of wild nature. Mm-hmm. And we went hiking in some of these places. We went on an edible food walk that was incredible.
Eye-opening. Eye-opening is how much food is at your feet.
So you went on a walk with a guide who knew which things you could eat?
Exactly.
Okay, interesting. How did you arrange that?
This is a gentleman called Christophe Anglade, and mm-hmm. he has a website and a company called Aluna Voyages, and he's sort of this expert hiker, forager, woodsman.
Yeah, if you can envision what a forest ranger, you know, historically could have been in terms, or not even forest ranger, but someone who just lives and breathes living in the woods or living on the.
Uh-huh. It's like a French Bear Grylls. He's like, he's, you know, he's that kind of guy who could just conjure fire out of nothing.
Yeah, pretty much. That's him.
So he does hiking and foraging tours all over the world.
Okay.
But he lives in Auvergne and does focus a lot of his tours in Auvergne.
And when you talk about people who, you know, who've written the book on certain things,
he literally wrote the book
on edible food walks or edible food in the forests of Auvergne. Yeah, we hooked up with him and he took us on a morning tour and then we popped back to his house in the
cabin.
Woods and he helped us prepare a meal with the stuff that we gathered.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, it was a wonderful morning, afternoon. Yeah.
So getting back to your question, for me, I think the biggest surprise was really just the unspoiled nature and the wildness of parts of Auvergne.
For me, it was discovering that there are volcanoes in France.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. No, that was a surprise to me when I saw the pictures as well. Interesting. Now, I'm a little surprised that when you talked about, for instance, the root of cheese, the root de fromage, that there is that tourism infrastructure, because often we've seen even in wineries that that's still coming in France. You know, I'm used to out here that every winery has a tasting room, it seems, and a visitor center and ready to receive guests. But it seemed like that was more so there than I am used to in France.
Yes, and I think the tourism office there is due kudos for a lot of that, the cheese route and the Natitude program and those sorts of things. And I think part of it is because the area is so unknown that they really want to make it easy for visitors to come and experience and be part of it. But also I think that people are very passionate about their region and their local products and are really excited to talk about it and to welcome visitors there and share it with people.
Yeah, I think you look at the US and things like that, there's a lot of individualism. Like individuals come up and say, I'm going to build a tasting room. And then because one person's done it, a bunch of other people do it. In France, it's not like that. They're all independent in a different way of, well, I'm just going to go and create my cheese and I'll sell that. And, you know, if I don't sell it, then I don't know what I'll do, but I'm not going to go and create a tasting room for my cheese because that's just not French. But it takes somebody outside of that to come in and create these activities. And that's what Allison's saying at the tourism office. We saw the same thing in South Tyrol, right? The farmers are unto themselves. They do their own thing and they do it really, really well, but they're not self-organizing enough to go and create these sorts of things or to create even the idea that, sure, come and visit. So Southern Italy would be different with their agriturismo, where maybe there's a little bit more of a individualism has built up into, you know, I need to create some other part of my business or some other business as part of my income to sustain myself.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Now, the one thing I wonder where it doesn't get as many tourists, how is it for someone who doesn't speak French?
I would say of a lot of the regions we visited, it's relatively easy. Certainly, if you're talking to older people who are not involved in the tourism sector at all, you're probably not going to get much English. But in terms of the infrastructure and like websites and information, it's pretty much all available in English. All of the bigger attractions will have English. So if you go to Puy de Dôme or the museums around Clermont-Ferrand or Vichy, that's all available in English. It's only the very, very small local things where it might not be there yet. But I think, again, that the tourism office has put a big push on making it accessible. And English is really becoming the standard traveling language across Europe.
Right.
So
and even in these small places, they'll bend over backwards to try and help to communicate. So
yeah, even if they don't speak English, they will really try to help you out and understand what you want and get it for you.
Yet again, one of those places in the world where, you know, when they can't communicate with you, they'll go get the teenager and bring them out.
Yeah.
Sure. I think that's a lot of places in the world. Any recommendations on when to go? What time of year or particular festivals or anything like that?
We were there in late June and it was lovely. It wasn't too hot. I would say kind of spring and fall would probably be great. Summer would be lovely too, but I think you just have to take care if you were doing a lot of hiking and things like that. It is going to get warm in the midday for sure.
Excellent. Before we get to my last four questions, anything else we should know before we go to Auvergne?
It really is an undiscovered gem, but caveat, you should go soon. People are starting to find out about it. It was actually on, I think it was the Lonely Planet places to go list for this year.
Regions. It was one of the top regions for 2016.
So it is starting to get a little more known, and I think it's time to go now and see it while it is unspoiled, while people don't know as much about it.
Okay, so we'll ask everybody who's listening not to share this episode. Just don't tell anybody until you get a chance to get there.
That's right.
Just don't tell anybody. It's our little secret. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Auvergne.
You're sitting by the side of the road, eating a dish that is comprised entirely of potatoes and cheese, and you have had a dish the night before comprised totally of potatoes and cheese that has a completely different name and uses a different cheese.
I think you just answered the next question, which is, how do you know when you're on Auvergne? But you're standing in the prettiest spot that you saw in all Auvergne. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
My vote would be for the top of Puy Mary, which is another mountain.
Uh-huh. Another volcano.
Yeah. Another spectacular view down over valleys and one of the best drives of a mountain that you'll have.
Not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, well, unless you're the driver and you like driving on small, skinny roads with two-way traffic.
It's really hard to find a bad view in Auvergne.
Allison, did you want to pick a different one? You don't have to agree with Andrew all the time. It's okay. We won't tell him.
I never agree with Andrew. That is a good one. I would say for me, one of the most spectacular views was just sitting on the little patio at Bois Basalt's mm-hmm. cabin and watching that sunset over the Puys. It was just really breathtaking.
Excellent. And then I think the question that Allison already answered, finish this thought, you really know you're in Auvergne when what? Or if you like, you could tell me what makes you laugh at this one. It's okay. We do the answers and mix up the questions later on.
Other than potatoes and cheese, I would say you're hiking up a mountain and you're in France and there's nobody else around.
Andrew, different answer?
No, I go with that.
Okay. And last question. If you had to summarize Auvergne in three words, what three words would you choose?
Wild, surprising, and beautiful.
Well, I'm terribly disappointed that the word cheese didn't make it in there, but... Coming from you two. Our guests again have been Allison and Andrew Cornford Matheson. Where can people read more about your travels?
People can find us at cheeseweb.eu. And if they're looking specifically for information Auvergne, just click on France and you'll find all the regions. And there's all kinds of articles about our travels through Auvergne there.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming back on the show and sharing with us not only your love for cheese, but your love for Auvergne.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
We had a couple comments on last week's show on Utah, on the parks in Utah. Kevin pointed out that I was confused. He said, I was confused why you kept referring to southeastern Utah. Zion and Bryce are definitely southwest. Capitol Reef and Escalante are central. Arches, Canyonlands are both southeastern, but really, collectively, they are southern Utah. Kevin, you are right, and I should have had a map open as I said that. Mark commented, what's in a name? The government gets complicated when deciding names. For example, Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument is not run by the National Park Service, but by the Bureau of Land Management, while Cedar Breaks National Monument is run by the NPS. And I don't know why that would be. That's interesting, Mark. Which brings me to my comment. Cedar Breaks National Monument is another smallish, by Western standards, park with few visitors and interesting scenery. We spent a week based in St. George, Utah, visiting Zion, Cedar Breaks, and Bryce, with a bit of staircase thrown in. I would agree with your guest that driving Monument Valley is car-friendly. We drove it in a Subaru Forester with no problems. Thanks so much, Mark. Thanks so much, Kevin. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. I was going to tell you that it's now too late to sign up for the Cambodia trip that we're doing in April, but someone just signed up last week, so maybe I'm wrong. If you have any questions on Amateur Traveler, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. The transcript of this and all episodes is sponsored by J-Way Travel, experts in Eastern European travel. You can also follow me on Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram as Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.